All right.
Okay, with the filmmaker of Sweet Dreams, a 34-minute short film played at the Wild Sound Festival, Gary Alvarez. He is the director and writer. This is an interesting film. It's first of all, it's a long 30. It's a long film. 34 minutes is long for a short, but it works. And pitch the concept to people. Tell people what it's about. I don't think I can give it its service.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me, and thank you so much to you and to the Wild Sound Festival for all your support. So I am the writer director of Sweet Dreams. It's a story about survival and what we do when we're pushed to the limit to protect our family. And so in the film, we follow a young woman. Her name's Esperanza. She's pregnant for the first time. She's excited to be a mother, and she's living with her partner, Kike, and he's also excited to be a first-time dad. And what ha ends up happening in the story is on his way to work, he is basically kidnapped in an alley. And the next time we see him, he's locked up in a cage. What ends up happening is Esperanza tries to go through the avenues, going through the police to help her find him. That doesn't work. He goes missing for weeks, and then during this time, she's not working, and so her savings are dwindling, and the baby's due, and so she realizes without Kike, who's the breadwinner, he's a mechanic, she needs to go back to work, and so she starts looking for work. Her savings are dwindling, and to much to her surprise, she finds out. By the way, this is set in the near future. When it's legal to discriminate against pregnant women because they're a liability. So she goes to this agency where they basically tell her that. And so now she's become desperate. And on one of these days, while she's looking for Kika, she's posting up missing persons flyers around the city. She sees an advertisement for something called surrogate dreaming. And so she takes a picture, she goes to this clinic, she's kind of interested, she doesn't know what it is. And so she meets with the dream catcher technician. His name's Roger. He also owns the clinic. Basically explains to her this procedure. It's new technology where if you're not having dreams anymore, you can basically pay to have a service where you can experience the dreams of other people. And for them, the most expensive, the most lucrative dreams are the dreams of babies in the womb. And the idea there is that because the babies are in the womb, they haven't been adulterated or tainted by the world
They haven't
outside.
been
So that's
jaded
why
yet by the world, right?
they
So,
haven't been jaded, exactly. And so these, like a drug, this is like the purest, right? In the purest form. And so at first, she's like, "Well, I don't know. This sounds kind of sketchy. Is it dangerous?" He says, "No." He reassures her that he's done this thousands of times, and it's been safe the whole time. So reluctantly, she agrees to try it out. So they do a little bit of a test run, and she's blown away by what she sees on the computer screens. And so she agrees to do it. They make an appointment for the next day. And then on her way home, she starts experiencing these pains in her stomach that kind of freak her out. And she ends up having a dream for the first time in 10 years. I should also add too, because this story is set in the near future, we no longer have 8-hour work days as the norm. In the future, it's 20-hour work days. And so if you can imagine, you only have 4 hours in a day to do everything else in your life, raise your kids, get some sleep, go to the store, grocery shopping, et cetera. And so as a result, people, because you only have 4 hours to sleep, people are no longer reaching the REM level of sleep. That's when you start dreaming. You have to go deep into that. And so that is why some people are no longer dreaming, and that's why these dream catcher clinics start to pop up to provide this service. And she's one of those people that hasn't dreamt in 10 years. And so that kind of freaks her out too. So she goes back to the clinic the next day for an explanation. Roger, in the middle of the explanation, gets a phone call from one of his top clients, Mr. Murdoch, who we never see. He's kind of a shadowy figure. We only hear him on the phone, and he's threatening to pull the plug, so to speak, on the business. He doesn't want to finance it anymore. And
So
so
there's,
Roger Pat, I'm sorry, go ahead.
no, I was gonna say there's a lot going on, right? I don't want you to give everything, give everything away, but it's like a, you
Yeah,
get,
there is.
yeah. So let me ask you a question. So you're, it's 34 minutes. Did you ever considering just kind of making it a feature film?
I would love to make it a feature film. In fact, I'm in the process of developing it into a feature film.
Yeah.
I'm working on an outline. I'm trying to figure out what elements to keep, what elements to drop, what worked, what didn't work, what do people want to see more of, and what do people want to see less of. So that's kind of where I'm at in terms of the next phase.
You got the feature script is written then.
No, I'm working on an
Okay.
outline.
You're good on the outline. So okay, so tell, let's, I want to tackle things one at a time. What year do you think we are? What year are we supposed to be in?
So, in the film, you have to pay really, really close attention. There's a scene where the hood of a car is closed and you can see the license plates and it has the year on there. And if I remember
2027,
correctly,
right?
yeah,
You,
2027.
okay, so you're, I didn't know if that was like because that seems pretty close to where we are. So you're saying that things are gonna, I'm not saying that you're like, do you believe that things will change, can change that quickly? Like you, I love the license plate, by the way. Whoever did that was great. It's like one flag, one land. I wrote it down. One flag, one land, one nation, every more. So it's kind of like
Evermore,
this
yeah.
America first ideal is like kind of like, let's take care, let's kind of exploit the blue collar worker and the rich get richer, I guess.
Definitely. Shout out to our production designer, Sherry Datchy. She designed that for us.
Yeah.
Well, I imagine so when I wrote the screenplay in 2021, I imagined that it was in 5 years in the future. So that's why the license plates say 2027. So if you were to take, today as we're having this conversation, just imagine 5 years from now.
Yeah.
I definitely think a lot can change within 5 years. I mean, here in the United States, we have a president every 4 years, and a lot changes in those 4 years.
A lot of, but to be fair, a lot changes every 2 years because the Senate and the Congress switches over usually too, right? Which will probably happen here.
Your American politics and your American government, the way it works. Yeah, that is true. I feel like, the world that we live in today is so fast that like technology changes so quickly. I feel like, yeah, definitely things. And, I wouldn't be surprised if this technology already exists and we just don't know about
Oh,
it.
I'm sure it does. Yeah. I love that
When
because
I
that's what I loved about the idea, because that's what's so interesting about AI and all this new technology is that people want the what they want to tap into the unknown of humanity, if that makes sense. And what's more unknown than dreams, right?
Yeah.
It's
Yeah, when
almost
I
like an
wrote it,
entertainment, yeah.
absolutely. When I wrote it, it was just pure imagination. Like I didn't know if this technology existed or not. I just thought it'd be interesting to see visually on the screen.
But just from a storytelling standpoint, when we're talking about all these kind of macro kind of themes in your film, from a storytelling standpoint, here you have a woman who's pregnant for the first time, her husband goes missing, and she's going to deliver, then she doesn't have any money, and she's going to deliver a child any day now. That's pretty stressful. That would say that would be a 9 out of 10 on the stressful scale, I guess, right?
Yeah, I would agree.
Yeah.
And having experienced that recently myself, I'm a new dad.
Congratulations.
Thank you. It is very stressful for me as a father. I can only imagine how stressful it is, for
It's not even, yeah, let's be honest here. Like I have two kids, young two kids of my own. Like the mom, come on, it's like 10 times worse than than we have it, right? So
I agree, and I think moms are heroes, And
yeah.
we should praise them more often. But yeah, I mean, it doesn't start off that way for sure. Like the opening scene, I wanted to establish them in their most private, intimate space, their bedroom, and they're in bed. And it's just early morning, and they're having one of those morning conversations before he goes to work. And I wanted to pr create open the movie with this safe space for them. Having this conversation about being parents, showing how much in love they are and how excited they are to be parents. And then from there, it just, takes off.
Yeah, so okay, so then and then but also like you have this story, but then you also kind of like are adding these kind of like themes into the film, right? Where like it's like selling dreams. Like she, when you're desperate, you do desperate things, and you're selling the dreams of your unborn child. That seems pretty desperate to do. Like that's something that I don't think I would want to do for all the money in the world, right? So.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to do that either for my son. And when I was watching the film for the first time, a complete cut, and this wasn't intentional. I think it was more subconscious. I realized that she's in a very, very extreme way, kind of pimping her child,
Yeah, well, that's exactly what she's doing. Yeah.
and so that's like the very dark review of the film, but like I said, it wasn't intentional. I didn't set out to do it that way, but that's kind of how it's coming across to some people, and certainly I could see why.
But it comes down to what we do when we're desperate as humans, right?
Right. And I think that's part of the critique of the film. On the surface, it's a story about a woman, giving birth to a child and becoming a parent, but underneath, there is a critique of the current political system and economic system here in the United States, where the working class get pushed to the limits, and so much is demanded of the working class, and pushed to the limits, and the things that and I definitely I consider myself more middle class now in terms of going up the economic ladder, but I was definitely born and raised into the working class, and so that's kind of how I see the world. And so even though financially I'm better off than my parents, I cannot extract myself from that perspective. And so what I see happening is people being exploited and taken advantage of, and the extreme decisions that we have to make sometimes, the working class, where are we gonna use this money to pay the rent or pay for electricity or pay for food for the kids, et cetera, et cetera. And this is an example of that, but pushed to the extreme. And I feel like some people might be actually going through something like this, obviously not selling dreams, because that technology doesn't exist as we know it, as it's portrayed in the film, but making those tough choices.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And it's also the unknown choice too, right? Because you don't know the ramifications of it's almost you ever like people a lot of filmmakers do this, but they go to like the my analogy is that they go to a drug clinic and they get paid they have to stay there for like 10 days and they get paid like $3,000 to $4,000 and they're experimenting drugs on them and then basically because they don't know what it is, right? These things still exist. And a lot of filmmakers do it, or artists do it, because it's quick money, and then they can make a move their movie afterwards. But you don't know the consequences, right? So she's doing this, but what are the consequences of this in the long term, right?
Right. And that's definitely a concern that she brings up to Roger. And he's a shrewd businessman, and reassures her that there aren't any long-term consequences. And the technology, as it's portrayed in the film, is relatively new, and so he's not even fully aware of the long-term consequences. It reminds me a little bit of this episode of The Simpsons, where Homer gets LASIK, right? I don't know if you've seen that episode. And as soon as he walks out of the clinic, his eyes grow fur, as one of the side effects. And so, in many ways in the film, yeah, there nobody knows what the long-term consequences are. And one of the short-term consequences is, for at least Esperanza, that she experiences a dream for the first time, in 10 years. And so Roger obviously wants to play that and reassure her, so that she keeps coming back and he keeps making money off of her and the baby.
Yeah, exactly. So okay, so tell me about let's tell me about the did you always like thought it was going to be like a long like a 30-minute film when you were filming it?
No, so I originally wrote a short screenplay that was about 15 pages. I had written it specifically at that length because I wanted to submit it to a competition, and that was one of the guidelines. And I brought it to my writers group, and they wanted to know more about the backstory. They wanted to know more about Esperanza and Kike's relationship together. And so every time I would do a rewrite, the story kept getting longer and longer and longer, to the point where the shooting script is about 29 pages. And I remember at one point getting notes from my writers group saying, "Hey, if you're going to shoot this, you got to trim it because it's going to be a really long short, and you're not going to be able to submit it to a lot of festivals." And at that point, I kind of went with my instinct. I felt like this is the story that I want to tell, and this is how long it's taken me in terms of page count, and I'm okay with that. And I'm going to shoot it this way, and we'll see what the total running time turns out to be. And from the 29 pages, we got 34 minutes and like 15 seconds out of it. And so, that bit of advice from my writers group turned out to be true. There are a lot of festivals that cut off at 30 minutes. There's even more that cut off at 20 minutes. But that's okay. I was able to screen it, with Wild Sound, and it's gotten into other festivals. And it's just a matter of finding a home for the film. And so, the short answer to that is no. I did not imagine that when I set out to make this film or write the screenplay that it was going to be 34 minutes.
So let's talk about the process of making the film, because it's like lots of scenes, lots of locations. There's a lot going on too, right? You got the technology on the computer when she's in the hospital. This seems like a pretty, and this is, well, it was a very ambitious shoot. But tell me about like producing it, getting all the locations together, kind of like how many days did you guys shoot it?
Oh, now you're talking my language. I love talking about ma the making of. So, we shot it in 6 days. It was very ambitious. All the interiors, we rented a studio here in LA in Filipino town called Avenida Studios. So their bedroom, the Dreamcatcher clinic, and the Dreamcatcher lobby, all of that was shot in the same location. They already had a standing they had some standing sets. The studio, the bedroom, was already there for us. We just moved some stuff around. All the stuff that you see, all the props and the set dressing from that space, actually is stuff from my home, which makes the scene even more personal for me. Like all the toys that you see in the film, even down to her t-shirt, all that stuff belongs to me and my wife and my son. And so that, when I see it on the screen, it reminds me, it makes it even more personal. So we shot all the interior scenes at Avenida in 5 days. And then for the exterior scene, the metro, we drove to a metro in Long Beach. We shot it there. We shot a gorilla. By the way, the metro scene, the mom and the child and the grandma that's on the bench, that's actually my wife and my son and my mom. Which is my favorite scene in the whole film, even though it's not the most crucial to the plot. It's the one that's the most personal to me. We shot that gorilla, no permits. We got in and out in about 4 hours. And then the exteriors of the clinic we shot at our producer's dentist's office in Orange County. And then there's a scene at the Ferris wheel. We shot that at a place called The Pike. It's like a kind of like a touristy place in Long Beach. We shot that gorilla as well. We didn't know if the security guards were going to come. Nobody came and bothered us, and so that was beautiful. I did want to get the giant Ferris wheel in the background because I like the way it looks on camera, especially at night.
So then you kind of grabbed some boards, some exterior scenes, and you shot in a studio for the interior scenes, I guess, right?
Yes.
Talk to me about the casting. Obviously, your lead, she's basically in every scene, very important role. And then the other kind of cat people, like everybody looks familiar in your film. I don't know, but that's maybe because I see a lot of films, or but they all were fantastic, and they all had a kind of like you can tell that they knew they all. I'm watching it the second time. I'm like kind of breaking down your film, and you can tell that they all know what they're doing. Like so, it was great casting choices. How did you find everybody for the roles?
Thank you. I'll pass that note to my actors. For Esperanza, we cast a young actress named Andrea Saint Martin. She's originally from El Salvador. And for the casting process, this was new for me. This is my first film post-pandemic. When I started as a filmmaker, we would do auditions in person, which I really, really enjoy because I get to meet the actors in person and get a sense of their vibe. This is the first time I did all online auditions, and so we got like over 1,000 submissions for all the parts. combined, and for each of the leads from those hundreds of auditions for each one, I narrowed it down to 10. And then what I did was I scheduled in-person auditions for those top 10, and then from there I narrowed it down for Kike and for Esperanza. I narrowed it down to the top 5, and I had actors come in and read together. It was very important for me to have the actors have a natural chemistry on screen to play those roles, and so that's how I was able to find Andrea. And for Kike, Francisco, he came in and read, and they're just amazing. For the other characters, same process for them as well. I had them come in and read with for Ray, for Wade, who plays the assistant, and for Roger. Roger actually, he lives in San Diego, and he couldn't make it in person because we were casting in LA. So I took a chance on him, not having been able to meet him in person. But I think it worked out in the end. The other characters, the secretary at the job agency, she's a friend of mine. And the guy who plays the recruiter, also a friend of mine. And so I called in a couple favors from them, and they came through for me. And then, as I mentioned, my wife, who's not a trained actress, my mom, also not a trained actor, and my son, he's only 11 months old in the scene. So that was how I went through that casting process.
So I like how like I could see this being a feature where you kind of dive deeper into the doctors and their clinic and the dream clinic. You kind of have a separate scene with the two of the characters. I guess the doctor who's perfectly casted as like the pretty boy kind of like business like. More business than talent, I guess. Doctor, I guess I would describe it. And then his like was his assistant, his nurse. How would you describe him? That
Yeah, his assistant is Wade.
yeah. And he's kind of like more like you can tell on his face he's not as like gung ho about this, but he's still on board. And I guess that's the best way to put it from my perspective, at least. And you kind of gave them their own little scene, right, in the film. And it's you kind of take away from her journey, and you could get given their moment, and that's when I was watching your film. I'm like, oh, this is a feature film, right? Like the basic meaning that they can really dive deeper on the origin story of these characters and like how this happened and where their scruples lie, right? Like they're not like little. There's nuance to the characters. They're not all out evil, I guess, right?
Yeah, I wanted to make them less two-dimensional
Yeah.
that as they came across on the page. And so I did want to give them a moment for the audience to breathe and take a moment away from Esperanza and her trials and tribulations, and dive in a little bit into the world of Roger and Wade, and what are their motives? Why are they doing this, these things to these people? And so for Roger, I think in the future, that's definitely something that I want to dive deeper into. His backstory. He's actually not a doctor. He dropped out of medical school.
Okay.
Not because he wasn't intelligent enough. He just didn't want to spend, 8 years going to school to become a doctor. I always imagined him being very, very intelligent. But he's also very business minded, and he just wants to make as much money as quickly as
Yeah.
possible.
Yeah.
And so, if we do end up making the feature, I imagine him coming from, a wealthy, old money family from the East Coast, where he has the funds to invest in this dream catcher clinic, which are just pop-ups. By the way, these are one of many, right? They're all over the country, and
Yeah.
he invests in one of those, and he learns how to use the equipment. He's actually his title in the film is dream catcher technician.
Yeah.
And he's the face of the business, which is why I casted, such a handsome actor, Adam Daniel. Whereas Wade, he's ambitious. He wants to be like Roger, but he doesn't have the same connections, and so he has to work his way to the top. And he's willing to do some of the dirty work, which is why in that scene they're having this conversation. He's trying to understand the business and how it works, because he hopes to one day run his own dream catcher clinic.
Yeah, gotcha. So yeah, and then obviously there's a journey with the characters, and she's kind of comes up with her conclusion. Then you kind of have like this, without giving anything away, you kind of have this kind of final kind of confrontation between the two of them, I guess, right? And like I said, there's nuance and gray in between with all the characters. Like there's not just like one good person and one bad person. There's like what she's doing could be questioned, what he's doing obviously can be questioned, but at the same time, this is what's good. If this is the future, I don't think people are gonna have an issue with it, especially because we're in this capitalistic kind of zone in the last 100 years of our existence, right? Not to get too deep and macro about it, but basically I think that's what's happening, right? So it's about making money, right? And this is something, and this is also a way to make money for both of them.
Absolutely. We live in a time where I think making money and earning a living is at the forefront of our thoughts and our daily activities from the moment we wake up. How are we, we got to go to work, make money to support our families. I'm a first-time dad, like I said, and so now I have to factor in, I have to support my wife and my kid and things and the decisions that I make. And so it's definitely a concern, not only for people who are, living paycheck to paycheck, but then also the people on top. How do I keep making money, more money, more money? But I think the heart of the film though is, how it affects us on a human level,
Of
from
course.
Esperanza's perspective, how does it affect her as a mom to be and a loving partner? And then on the flip side, how does it affect Wade's humanity as a business person, as somebody who wants to keep climbing up the social ladder?
I like the ending. I like the ending scenes as well. The kind of darkness. Like I don't want to give too much away, but I love the kind of cinematography about it. So, which leads me to the question: working with your cinematographer, did you guys have like how did you guys prepare? Did you guys have like a shot list, or did you storyboard things? Like you said, 6 days, lots of location, lots of shots, lots happening. I'm curious about your process, your directorial kind of preparation when you're went to, before shooting.
Well, absolutely, we had a shot list. I do not go on set without a shot list.
Well, I mean, like,
That is like
did you
the
storyboard things or?
No, I'm not a very good storyboard artist. And so because of that, I tend not to storyboard. But what I do like to do is I like to go to the location and then I like to take photos of the space, which is something that we did do. My cinematographer, Ruben Mendoza, we went to the spaces, we scouted the locations, we took photos. And so based on the photos, we started to do overheads of where to put the camera. A lot of that changed when we started to move stuff around furniture, especially in the studio. It was very important for me to have in the opening shot sunlight coming in through the window and hitting Kike's face as he's resting his head on Esperanza's belly. So we had to move the bed in order to get it close to the window. So a lot of the shots changed once we set up the locations as you see them in the film. But absolutely, yeah, we talked about we definitely had a shot list, we had overheads. We talked about the mood and the lighting that we would use. One of the references that I sent him in terms of the look was a film called Children of Men. I don't know if you've seen it. An excellent film, very, very similar in
Cuaron,
terms of
Alfonso
tone.
Cuaron, right? Who directed it?
Yeah. Alfonso Cuarón directed it, and
You said
so
it
I
better
wanted
than
it
I
to
did. I
have.
apologize. That was the Gentile English version of his name.
Oh, no worries. I totally understand. Yeah, and I just like the look of that film, in terms of its grittiness. And so I wanted, the scenes, especially in the basement, to look kind of like that. The scenes on the street, to look gritty like that. And so we had those conversations, and I think he did a beautiful job.
Yeah, 100%. And so, yeah, it would like, so it was your first time working with them or?
Yeah, first time working with him. I found him through a mutual friend, a writer director that we both know. I saw his film and I like what he did in his film, and I reached out to him and I very cold just hit him up on Instagram and I'm like, "Hey man, I saw your work. Do you like sci-fi?" And he wrote back, "Yeah, I love sci-fi." And that's how the conversation started, our mutual love for sci-fi films.
Cool. And so and then so then now it's on the festival circuit and you're basically kind of like pitching it out there, and it's almost like basically it's a proof of concept for a bigger film in many ways. And yeah, I think it's excellent. I think that one last question for you, and I'll let you go. Let me ask, without giving away the ending, did you want a happy, like, why, like, you, there's two ways to go about this film in a very black and white way. A happy ending or not so happy ending? Why did you choose to go with the one way, if you want to say what it is? But I'm curious about your choice of making it the I don't do you want to say what if it's a happy ending or not so happy ending?
I think it's, I hope it's a happy ending for Esperanza and Kike. Like,
It's a happy ending. It's a happy. It could be a lot. Basically, it's a very happy. For me, it's a very happy ending. It could have been a lot worse. You kind of like
there
give
was,
the audience something good to the root for.
definitely different endings throughout the course of the rewrite,
Yeah.
that were not as happy. And when I would share, people felt that, and they're like, "Yeah, there's something missing in the ending." And so I wanted to kind of bring it full circle. And I felt like Esperanza and Kike needed the justice that they deserved, you know. And so in the previous drafts, they weren't getting that. And so I think in the what you see at, in the film is that they get the justice that they definitely deserve as parents and her as a mom. And that everyone who did them wrong, you know, karma, you know, comes back and gets them in the end.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I like that then, because he, like I said, he could have gone in another direction, but it's you're giving people hope, I guess, right?
I hope for justice. Yeah, I hope
Yeah.
that, you know, at the end, you know, those people who are taken advantage of will get what they deserve, and the people who are, you know, struggling and doing the right thing and just trying to live life
Yeah.
in a very loving kind of way, you know, get the justice that they deserve.
You hope so, but it kind of doesn't really work out that way in life. Or maybe I'm a cynic.
I'm a little bit of a cynic too, but there's that little bit of hope that doesn't want me to be a cynic,
Yeah.
and wants me to be an optimist. And I think that little spark is what you see at the end. You know, because in like I said, in different earlier drafts, it didn't end that way for
Yeah.
Esperanza.
Gotcha. All right, man. Well, congratulations on the success of the film. It's fantastic, and I wish you the ultimate best of success with it. And keep in touch. I want to let's talk again when you make your next film, or obviously when you make this into a feature film. I'd love to help out anyway.
Yeah, definitely. Wild Sound is definitely on my list of film festivals to keep submitting to. I appreciate all the support that you guys have given us, myself and the cast and the crew. So I appreciate you guys.
Thank you.